it, Joe.
All right, let's get this show rolling.
On time for a change.
Ugh. Yeah.
All right, here we go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show! All right,
that's pretty good. That's the best one yet.
Pizza, pizza.
My fly is open.
T.O. Showtime!
While you were making egg foo young in the kitchen, I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a little thing, Tech Show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the cast, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that'll link it bad. For the show links, go direct to DLNTS.org. And IRC channels at LinuxLink.net. Bound Tech Show. Just sit right there, cause the castle's just about to begin.
Welcome to episode 884 of the Linux Link Tech Show. On the show tonight, we have Pat.
How's it going, man?
We have Joe.
I'm here.
And we have Joel. And we have
Joel. I'm in there somewhere, I hope.
Yeah, there you go. Whoa, so just a little update.
Internet issues.
Yeah, there's a little update on the migration to Internet Archive. What I did is I removed 45 gigs of files from the archive site, not Internet Archive, from our archive site, and I have them either locally on my storage and on my storage, or on my SAN storage and on Internet Archive right now. So they're in two locations. The majority of like episodes 1 to, I think it goes like episodes 1 to 150, and then episodes 300 to 500 or something are all up on Internet Archive. There was a gap from like 1 something or whatever it was to 250, 300. For some reason at the time when I originally did this, that was the group of files, of audio files, that Link had up on his server for Bluehost. And the rest of them, I know, were on internet, are on our TLLTS archive. And so I had just moved what I had on that archive location into Internet Archive. Anyway, they're all technically still available, all the episodes, between Internet Archive, our archiving hosting site, and the Blue hosting site. All that stuff is available. If you don't see it, if you're really looking for an older episode and you don't see it in the drop-down list, it's going to be on Internet Archive. What I haven't done yet is Internet Archive is an intermix of MP3s and AUG files, and the Speaks and Opus files I have not yet uploaded to Internet Archive. I try to do a little bit every day, but sometimes it's difficult to fit that in, especially when you have work and everything else. So on my days off last week, I was doing work a little bit every day. And I still need to figure out like what I'm going to do about the naming structure. Because I kind of made another mistake when I originally did this a while ago, which has now come back to like bite me in the ass again. What happened when I originally went to upload these up to Internet Archive, I was using a tool called MP3 Info. And for some reason, it would truncate the output that we would get from what info I had originally put into the files. So because it was doing that, I erroneously made the assumption
that's all that was getting actually saved. And it wasn't that the tool was a problem. It was my original way of encoding or whatever I was ever using. It was truncating whatever I was putting in there because that's what was coming back with that tool I was using. Well, come to find out, MP3 info, I can't find it in the Fedora archives or repos. And I was like looking around in a pinch. I grabbed some other stuff and started reading the files. Now, it doesn't do it as easily as I liked MP3 info. Like I could just say, give me this and get the title, give me the artist, give me this, and I can just grab it like that. It was easy. But just the info files, I think is a little, gosh, I can't remember what I pulled down. Anyway, that was showing me, I do get the full output. It wasn't truncating. All that information is there. That kind of sucks because when I, like the old files were encoded and it had in the title, like who we had on as a guest. And then I was also putting in like the, who's on the artists under the artist part of it. I would put the name of each person that was the hostess that was on the show. And I stopped doing that a couple years ago when I did the initial batch up to Internet Archive because I'm like, well, it doesn't really matter anymore because it's always truncating it. I'm not getting the full thing. I might as well just put for the title the episode number, you know, TLLTS and the episode number. And then for the artist, it's just TLLTS crew, not who's actually on there. And lo and behold, that was a really stupid mistake on my part. I should have done a little bit more due diligence on that. But then that also brings up the fact that for like episodes, I'm going to say episodes 1 to, I'm thinking somewhere in the 300s at the very least, Pat put together like every one of these episodes had wonderful show notes. And kind of when we had all that stuff together and when we moved to the Bluehost and all that stuff originally, we kind of lost that connectivity, I think. It was all like in the database. I have access to all that information. I just now need to figure out like how to get it out and kind of how to like what to do with it. Right, because I don't want to lose that. Pat put a lot of effort into that, and that was some really good stuff. And if anybody wants to look back and say, hey, I wonder, you know, what guests, like when was Stephen Von Nichols on, or when was Mark Shuttleworth on, or RMS? I kind of still have that information. I just need to figure out how to get it all out and put it together and tie it to the episodes and everything. Because things right now, like I said, are scattered all over the place. And due to other mistakes, there's not a lot of coherency. And I got to figure out how to fix that. I really wish Internet Archive, like you could change the name of the file indicator when you upload it. But you can't do that after they changed their rules and say you can't do that anymore. I mean, that would be great if I could. Then I could fix everything, get it to where I want it to be, and I could put it back into a database and have all that information dynamically generated. But anyway,
yeah, that's the only way to do it would be to re-upload everything.
Yeah, I thought about that. I'm like, well, I'd have to re-upload all the files and then delete the old one, the other ones that were up there. I think I could pretty much delete those. And ideally, if I could script, I could script the upload. I'm not sure if I could script the removal.
You used to be able to script the upload. I'm not sure if you can anymore. There were some changes about a year and a half ago that prevented a lot of the scripting that people had been using for years.
Now, I have to double check that because I know there was a tool that you could pull off their website called – it was called Internet Archiver or something. It was the command line was IA, and I was using that to push up files. So I'm concerned about that, Joe. That's one thing that crossed my mind. I figure at the very least there has to be a command line way that you can upload files
to the Internet Archive. There used to be. I'm not sure if there is anymore.
Because
and of course I looked to see if there was a command line way to do it, so that when I was doing the Mintcast, when I was helping with the production side of that and uploading to Archive, I could just hit a button and be done.
I like that.
But there wasn't.
I'll look into that. But, and if I, maybe I have to use their API. Well, look at that. There's an API you have to.
Plus, maybe. As many episodes as you're talking about uploading, that's going to take a long time. It's a slow process.
Yeah, I know. It was a slow process when I did it last time. But anyway, I'll look into that, Joe. I will, and I'll let you know what I find.
Please do. I mean, if you find something, I'd love to know it.
According to... All right. Well, I will double check. And anyway, a couple other things. Like, boy, I had off Thursday and Friday last week. So I had a longish weekend because I'm burning up days. And I did a lot of this archiving stuff and getting things and squaring things away and getting things ready for the rest of what I need to do. I was feeling really good. I actually was like, I got a bunch of things I need to do at work. I'm kind of looking forward to getting back to work and hopefully wrap some stuff up by the end of the year. And so I was happy to go to work on Monday morning. And
that's always the wrong answer.
My manager contacted me like right before I was just about ready to start work, and he's like, hey, let me know when you get on. We got to talk about something. So I'm like, oh man. So I got on. He said, we got to talk about the Zoom thing, because what happened, like, we have paid accounts at Zoom, and the person who had our team Zoom alias, which linked to their personal account. Oops. Which was their personal work account, right? So they left, and then we needed somebody to take that alias over, right? So I took it over and set it up, and everything was fine until like the end of, like, towards the end of last week. For some reason, we started getting kicked out of our team Zoom session after 40 minutes, like it wasn't a paid account. And then I went on vacation, or, you know, had the long weekend, came back Monday, and, you know, my manager of our department's like, yeah, they took away all the paid accounts to save money. And we need to transfer the alias that was associated with your account over to my account. And that way we can keep going on. Well, lo and behold, when they take away your ability for your paid account, aliases are only allowed in a paid account. But if you had created an alias and then are no longer a paid account subscriber, you're just a general free schmuck with a login, you retain that alias, but you can't manage it. Right, I couldn't go in and delete that alias, like, forevermore. Until I deleted my account, that alias would always be associated with me and a link to my personal account. But because I wasn't a paid subscriber anymore, paid member or whatever, I could not manage that to delete it. And the admins on our team couldn't do that in my account and delete it. So it was kind of a quirk in the Zoom interface that wouldn't release that or get rid of it if you switch in that direction or allow you to release it. So, and this is what my project manager said to me after we did. He's like, I kind of thought that might be the case. I don't know if you're included on the open ticket for this. And I'm like, what's the JIRA number? And they're like, he's like, no, it's a ServiceNow ticket. And I'm like, I don't know. I didn't see anything, and I made the mistake. Joel knows this. I made the mistake of going into ServiceNow.
You must have been just on the ITIL watch list and not assigned a resource or something stupid like that. Because let me tell you, if you don't have things right, it's so easy to stuff.
It was even worse than that. I went into ServiceNow, and I immediately just like, I don't want to work the rest of the fucking week now. This thing is terrible. I like looked at this interface, and I'm like, it has changed since I had the last go in it like 2 months ago. It has changed yet again. And I could not figure out anything on it. I'm like, the only options I had were like open a ticket, look in the knowledge base. And like, so I go over to the ticket section and there's all these things of like, here, if you want to open this kind of ticket, click this. If you want to open this kind of ticket, click this. I'm like, I just want to see what tickets are open. And if any have me included on this, I couldn't find anything. Nothing. I had no clue. Like, and I'm like, I felt like a senior citizen who's never used a cell phone before. Has only used a rotary phone, is handed a cell phone, like an Android cell phone with the screen locked. And like, I'm looking at this and I'm like, I don't know what to do.
Or like my wife, when I hand her my phone with the default interface and she has an iDevice and she can't figure it out.
Like, I'm like, I'm not stupid. I know how to figure stuff out, but ServiceNow has conquered me time and time again.
And it all depends too on your organization. Like we had there's something in there called a C task. Okay, well, does the C task stand for a change task, or does that stand for case task? Now, right now, I think in our case, it's change task because if I write a change is going to involve another team. So like, say I need a networking to do something while I do something else on the same change, then I create a C task for that person. Or actually here, I got a good one here. A couple of weeks, I got a clone coming up for a client. And I have to create a C task to have the DBAs restore the database while I do my thing and copy over the executables so I can run the clone. Why I can't do both, I will never know, because it's just the way our organization is right now, because it's got to have separation of duties and all that kind of crappity crap. So, because I have, and I usually did do both when I was in professional services. And they hired, if they said, client needs you to do a clone. Okay, no problem. And I had nothing to write up, none of that bullshit. The only thing I had to write up was, here's how you sign into it. This is how it's set up. Good day to you. I feel your pain on Snow. I really do. Or ServiceNow. Yeah. And I don't even know. I'd ask you what version you're on, like New York or Chicago, or I forget what their versions are anymore. We had two migrations over the last year, and that sucked. And now we're in the process. Hopefully, by the end of the month, we're supposed to have our monitoring completely cut over from Logic Monitor over to Datadog. And Datadog has been spewing bad alerts. I have a feeling that Datadog's going to be the bane of our existence for a little while, because what I think's going to happen is we're going to get some false alerts, and then we'll get them all fixed, and then we'll do an upgrade, and then we'll get false alerts again.
Yeah.
That's how it works.
Yeah, to be honest, once you get that worked out, like, Datadog's pretty damn good.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's lots of stuff in there. Yeah. Yeah. That's like, we had a Datadog, like a office hours thing with our Datadog you know, the person on the Datadog side from Datadog. And one of the questions I threw out there is we have these Java-based listeners, all right? Well, right now, all monitoring can do is look at the process layer, you know, look at the process table in Linux or basically the Windows equivalent and say, hey, is this running, all right? And depending on, like, Windows, I think you actually probably get a little bit more because you can look at services and say, oh, yeah, according to services, it says it's running. Okay. In Linux, it just looks in the process table and it says, oh, yeah, it's running. Okay. Well, you ran into a problem where earlier this week, listeners stopped running. We never got an alert until the client initiated a ticket. Go in there. And our admin tool says it's down. All right, but if you actually look at the process layer, process is still up and running. It's just not doing shit. You have to kill it and restart it. Okay? So, but our monitoring needs to start looking at, okay, can you do something on that with that particular process? Can you send it a transaction and does it respond? How do I do that? You know? And that's one of the things I want to be going back to R&D and says, hey, here's what we want to do. You know, we're on the same team now. This is, you know, this is not when I worked for a client. We need to be able to do this. Other things too is our main system admin app has instrumentation in it that tells us, okay, you have this many connections on the listener. It's using up this much Java heap. I don't have so obviously there's instrumentation built into the code. But how can I take that and rip that out and plop it into Datadog, and then when it hits certain thresholds, send an alert? That's what I want to do.
I don't know about Datadog, but I know you can do things like that with ITSM.
Right.
Can you get that information in, like, can you pull that into a JSON format or XML?
That's a good question. I don't know. That's something we'll have to go to our R&D team to find out.
Is that just displayed on like a page that you hit?
Our admin tool is a Java program. So basically, we connect to it over, we control the listeners running on, like, for example, you have a daemon running on the server that, its job is basically, its whole job is to talk to our, admin application. For the most part, that application can talk to the other listeners on the ports once they're up and running. But port 9000, which is the main port for the daemon, that's the port that takes all the commands and says, okay, I'm going to start up. And that's a lot of the information comes from. And essentially, they're all the same kind of a process. It's quite literally the same code, whether it's the daemon or it's one of the listeners. It's the same Java code. So that's a good and interesting point. So I may go to my manager and says, dude, can I just go ahead and ask R&D? Because this stuff.
Our platform engineering team was writing like a Go application, had a Go application that worked with the collectors that we could plug in modules to it, and like we were able to write like RabbitMQ and Couchbase and different modules like that to be able to inject that information,
right,
and have it like we had Datadog for a while, and then that was then done for New Relic, and so it is possible to do that. We've done it. I did some work a little bit with the Couchbase one, and the I think it was RabbitMQ one. I did some work with, or I assisted with that. I remember when we were doing it. That was like 4 or 5 years ago, and then we deployed that through Chef.
Right.
So I know you can do it if you already have a tool that's slurping in that information that's from the application. You should be able to just take that information the same way it's being pulled in or being sent to and write that plugin for their collector.
Right. Yep. So I think I just need to talk to R&D and says, hey, is there an easy way to do this? You know, because that would be so useful, you know, to get an alert when stuff happens. So anyway, but
yeah,
that's work stuff. That's not fun.
So one last thing I wanted to add is, so then, like, that set the tone for kind of like the next couple of days, and it was a bummer situation. Got over to that, and we were supposed to have a release on Monday, but it didn't happen. Right, they weren't ready, so that gave me the opportunity with another guy on my team to do what I've been excitedly waiting for over a month, 2 months now, and that was upgrade our Couchbase clusters from 6.5 to 6.6. And I'd been done in development, I'd been done in staging, everything was all prime, ready to go, right? And we got the green light to do it, so I supervised and had the guy that I'm working with, who's learning more infrastructure side things right now, he did our East environment, and it went off without a problem, right? And so I was excited, and it took about 2 hours, 2.5 hours, and I'm like, we're good. And I'm like, they're like, well, should we do the next one? I'm like, or we could wait a couple of days. And they're like, well, why do we need to wait? And I'm like, you're right. Why do we need to wait? We did it in 2.5 hours. It's only 2:30. If we start it now, it'd be done by 5:36. It should be fine, right? And we did it. 2.5 hours later, it's upgraded too in our West environment. We're on 6.6 on both sides. Everything's fine. Like, I'm like, this is great. Everybody's happy. Everything's working fine. I look and I'm like, everything caught up with the rebalance. But I look at the documents in the buckets and I'm like, because I saw an error alert go off that said, hey, there's 200,000 or 200,000 plus difference of documents in these two buckets from East and West. In these buckets from East and West. So I look at it, I'm like, oh, and it's not a 200,000. It was like around 400,000 or whatever. No, 2 million. Sorry, 2 million document difference. And our threshold is 2 million. So it was at 4 million. It was spiking at 4 million. And it come down and it was back down to 2 million. And I'm like, okay, I think, you know, because 2 million is our threshold, if there's a lot of traffic and it's down around 2 million, we should be okay. Let's let all of this settle. It should be fine. I've been watching it. It's starting to go below that threshold. Things are looking fine. So I'm like, okay, I just let the team know this is the case. I wake up the next morning, and at 6 o'clock in the morning, I'm looking and I'm like, one of the things that caught my eye was the, Couchbase cross data center replication, XDCR. From our east to west cluster, it was like 40%. And from our west to east cluster, it was down below 20%. Now, by the time 6 a.m. came around the next morning and I was getting ready to work out and stuff, east had gone to like 70% and west was down around 40%. So it was increasing, but ideally those nodes should be at 99% each one. So I fired off a support just to cover my butt, a support ticket to Couchbase. Say, hey, we upgraded yesterday. Everything's looking fine. There's a difference in the number of documents in these two buckets. I've seen it's taking a really long time for XDCR to get back up to where it needs to be. Send them our logs. I'm like, do you see a problem? Do we just got to wait it out and it should be fine? And then, like, I expected them to do a release, usually like they do around 1 o'clock, between 12 and 1 o'clock in the afternoon. They did a release at 9 a.m. in the morning. And they switched traffic. That's never good. They switched traffic. And normally this wouldn't be a problem. And the release went out. And then I start getting, like, my one guy, one's lead in the team. Not the lead. I don't know what he is. He's just a manager type person. He's like, hey, can you help out over here with this maintenance problem? There's an outage. And so I go over and come to find out, like, they were missing documents. Like, they were missing stories and aggregates and stuff they were putting in. They weren't showing up since they had switched traffic. And then they were concerned about there being a problem. They started seeing errors and stuff. So then they decided to switch traffic back over to East. And that's when I realized what the problem was, is that because XDCR had not completed in either environment, caught up to 99%, 100%, new documents that were being added weren't being sent over to the other status center. So when they switched traffic to the other Couchbase cluster, those documents that they had added recently hadn't migrated over yet because of this upgrade problem. And so they were having issues. And then when they moved back to the data center that had more of the documents, that half hour time frame when more, when stories were entered, were over in the west but not in the east, and it was causing problems. But there wasn't that many, and they were able to get them over. But it really bummed me out that I caused this problem.
The perils of cloud computing.
Yeah, but so here was the thing, right? We do a Couchbase upgrade about once every year, and I ran into this problem 2 years ago and had documented it and had said in the documentation, if you do this, make sure before you upgrade the other data center that or switch traffic to the other data center, you let XDCR complete to 100%. And I didn't read the documentation that I wrote and that I updated. I didn't read it.
In a snow ticket?
Not a snow ticket. It was on Confluence. It's on our Confluence page. The steps to do this, which, and then I'm like, because it was in the back of my mind after I did this and noticed this, I'm like, damn, I think we went through this before, and it took like a long time, like 12 hours to finish his replication. Well, I was way off base. It didn't take 12. It took almost 24 hours to get up to a 98 to 100%. And so it's a lesson to be learned here. Not only do you need to document it, but when you go to do something, you should definitely just reread your documentation and read what you wrote and make sure you're on the same page. Remember
that you have documentation.
Yeah, because when I looked at this and I'm like, I've read this documentation so many times, I know exactly what I need to do. And I did know exactly what I need to do, except that one last step that was we had to make sure to double check that and verify that. I missed doing that, and it bit us in the butt. And that was like, that was not a good thing. But on the same token, I'm like, why did it take 24 hours? And I said to Couchbase, I'm like, hey, three things here. One, is it normal to take 24 hours for this thing to complete XDCR? I mean, it should have been up and running. Everything should have been fine in like 2.5 hours, but it took 24 hours for this to catch up. Is that normal? My next question was, is there a way to speed that up? If so, if it's not normal, or is there a way to speed that up, or something we could do to speed it up? And my third question was, am I correct in assuming that during this period, documents that are created or added to or manipulated in the cluster won't get replicated over to the west until XDCR is up to 100%, 98 to 100%, or sometime in that period? So we can't rely on those being in there or updated until XDCR is completed. And Couchbase sent back to me, we analyze your logs, we don't see any problems, this is the expected behavior. And I'm like, okay, but you didn't answer two of my three questions. And even the one you did answer, like, I had to infer that there wasn't a problem.
Well, so this is you talking to support, or you talking to somebody else, or
no? This is me with their support. I'm like, I really wish you would have answered my three specific questions. more so than just saying, we looked at your logs, we didn't see a problem, so it appears that things are okay. Is that normal? 24 yeah. hours? Is it? Just tell me, yeah, that's kind of the part of the course, and no, there's nothing you can do to make it better, and probably you're right in that if you do documents during this period, they're not going to be transferred over reliably in a speedy manner until it's all completed, because you never know.
Right? It's like, why do we do this to ourselves? You know, and it's everybody who ever writes documentation that I'm going to be highly critical of here. Because my issue, I had an issue that I've been tracking here. I get everything working in a non-prod environment, right? So, I go to do the same change in the prod environment. And I'm doing this myself at like, oh, dark 30, you know, like 12:30 at night. Get in there, get into my change it over, save it. Don't work. I'm like, what the hell? All right? So, I go back to our support and I say, support, talk to SAP. Let's find out, how they do this. Because the one thing was, is I searched for the error message and I found it. It's, of course, locked in SAP's knowledge base, which I can't get access to. Okay, so our support finds that, sends it to the document to me. I read it and I'm like, okay, great. How the fuck do I do it? it says, well, make sure the adaptive processing server has this, that you have an adaptive processing server with this monitoring service on it. And I'm like, okay, great. Tell me how to do that in the solution. Why can't you tell me how to do that? So he initiated a ticket. Then we added a call today with SAP. So we go digging through things. I said, I say, I got non-prod here. We can compare the two. Once we figure out what's wrong with the prod environment, I'll write the change and I'll get it done. All right, because I can't just do it, So we go in to find out is prod has a fully qualified domain name to one of our internal domains, and development doesn't have that. It just has the host name. I'm like, oh, fuck. I'm like, okay, great. So I was like, of course, where was this in any of the documentation? It was nowhere. So it's like, but we do this to ourselves. We assume, I think one of the problems that we all have is that we assume that we're writing this. One of the things they always preach in our change advisory board is that you must write the change so that anybody on the team can do it.
Man,
which is so hard to do.
I keep saying this.
Right.
If you're going, or not just releases, because you do need to provide the instructions to releases that any idiot can do, that I can assign any person on my team to do. Not that the people on my team are idiots, but
even worse if they're in Bangalore. So
they might not know anything about that particular application, so they're not going to understand your shorthand. Put every step there.
Yep.
Not only they might not use the same terminology as the development team.
Yep. When I write my change, I'll put links to say, go here, go there, do this, do that, copy this file here, do that, you're done.
Oh, or if you're going to provide us instructions, daily instructions for a workaround that you want us to do every day as a support team, you can't put it in your language. You have to put it in ours, and you have to put every step there. You can't just say, run the Bob job. Yep. What job are you talking about?
Right, yeah.
Give me the full path to this job. That way, any idiot can do it.
Yep. It's like I got another change I got to write for. They want me to change the timings on a cron job. I'm like, great. Which user's running it? That's not in the ticket. And I'm like,
so I what server is it running on?
Yeah, well, that I knew. That I knew because luckily, it was pretty obvious which one it has to be on. But it's like, change this schedule. I'm like, great. Well, and then here's the other thing, too. Our change advisory board says they won't let us change crons during the workday, during the normal uptime for the client. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Well, you gotta wait till a change window before that? Okay.
Yeah, honestly, changing a cron job is a production change.
Oh, I'm not disagreeing. So, I'm not disagreeing.
That requires a full release, which means it's gotta go through the cab team, so...
Right. And now, granted, you're talking a whole nother level, too. We're not releasing whole you know, systems, you know, right. when that happens.
You're,
you know?
You're not releasing new code, but you are manually... changing the running of said code when it's running.
Right.
And is there other code on the system that requires that code to be in place at a specific time?
Yep.
So,
and that code's not going to move anywhere. It's the same code. It's just changing. They want to change it from running every X amount of time to every Y amount of time. That's it.
Right, I mean, but it could potentially impact other jobs.
Not disagreeing, but yeah.
Which is why it needs to go through a CAB process.
Right. Oh, I'm not disagreeing it has to go through a CAB process, but there's no danger in not altering a cron job during the day when it's not during one of the cron windows, you know. But, you know, whatever, you know, we've got to follow the process policy because that's how it works.
We have so many processes that are interconnected with other teams' processes,
right?
That we really, really need the release process and we need the lead times just so that everybody can get in and review if it's going to cause them issues or not.
Yeah, I know. It's like we got a request from a client says, hey, they put the request in yesterday. All right. We reviewed it this morning because it was late yesterday when it came in. All right. So during the work review, we caught it, and they said, well, we want to do that tomorrow night. You know, like, it's now Wednesday morning. They want to do it Thursday night. You might make cab, but odds are not high at that point, all right, in order to make it in time for the change window. So, got to do an emergency change.
Well, I'm glad you brought up emergency changes because emergency changes pissed me off today.
Oh, I know. Same here. Yeah.
I don't mind an emergency change. I understand emergency changes happen. They are a very important aspect. What bothers me about an emergency change is when you're using one to get around a change freeze.
That's right.
And around lead times.
Right.
Because you're supposed to have a 5-day lead time, but you only want a 2-day lead time. But the incident that you're using was closed 2 days ago, and your release is the day after tomorrow. So it can't be that big of a dang emergency if it doesn't have to go in 10 minutes from now.
Right. So the work review, we pushed out the time on there, and the client assurance manager was there. So they said, okay, that's fine. I'll talk to the client and let them know. Well, she does that. The client says, well, we have to have this in place so that we can do financial aid on Friday. It's like emergency change. It's the only way we can get it done in time, you know. And there's certain – they want to – we – something like that. Because, see, this is a unique situation where the client actually has access to their non-prods and they develop the code there. They may develop it in a development account, install it on their own into a test account to make sure it works and make sure the installation of it works. And then they'll want us to do the installation in prod because we don't let clients do that yet.
What, now, you don't spell QA PROD?
No.
That's not how you spell quality assurance?
Yeah, no. Yeah, so, I mean, because it's getting to the point now where they're like, well, can't we just let clients install their own software updates? I'm like, hell no.
No.
I mean, a lot of them have the power to do it, but they shouldn't be doing that.
Well, the development team should have access to all of your lower lanes.
Yes, agreed.
And should be able to do all the testing they want in lower lanes, and then once it's ready for production, the only thing I should have access to as a support team is their UAT production. To production.
Right.
That's it. Read from UAT, write to production, that's it.
Yep. See, and that's the nice thing is we have a release management system where it's just essentially a database that keeps track of, okay, this software update is in development test and hasn't been made to prod yet. So, and you can take the same software group and install it in each one. So, and track it with the same number, same name if you need the name, but things like that. You know, the client can group them. We group them. You know, it's one of those things where you know, where do you draw the line in our case? Because in a lot of cases, the code and stuff that's in these changes, they know it better than the insurance team because we're not programmers. We're system administrators. So, I mean, that's the thing. You know, so so we're in a real unique situation. So I don't know how we're going to make things better automation-wise. They're talking about automating software updates. I'm like, good luck with that. you know, because that's a dangerous area to go, especially right. The way some of our software updates run. You know, I mean, now,
you're going to have them automatically back out too when there's an issue?
Well, see, that's the thing is our common software updates, there's no back out. So if the update goes in and it's not working, and the client has to fix it in their non-prod and give us another update so that we can do the emergency change. So, but
yeah, see, that's another major difference.
Right.
When you guys have an update or when you guys have a broken release, the release that fixes it is an emergency release as opposed to a continuation of the broken release.
Oh, yeah. Yes, correct.
We are fixing that slowly. We're getting better with our release process, but that has always been a major pet peeve of mine, randomly adding things to a release that were not in the instructions.
Yep.
And it's allowed.
Yep, that's not and shouldn't be allowed. But anyway, that's workity work stuff. I want to talk about my Blandster's handheld and how I cannot believe this thing actually exists.
what is the Blandster's handheld?
It looks like a Game Boy, but it's got a color screen. Miniature. It's actually a little bit smaller than the Game Boy itself was. Has 520 games on it. But as I went spelunking through that this evening before the show, I noticed there are several that are literally duplicates of some of the other games. Like, for example, there's one called PKA Chew. Okay, kind of sounds like Pikachu, right? You go into the game, and it kind of looks a little bit like Super Mario, but you have Pikachu.
My question is can you directly access the memory?
It's a good question. I haven't opened it up yet. I'm debating opening up or not. Because there's enough on there that's actually, honest to God, just straight up rips of NES games. Excitebike's on there. Although I haven't figured out how to...
Well, to is get... there an NES emulator in there? That would be my question.
Yeah, that is my question too. Because there's a lot of games on there I just don't want to play. You know, but then like, you
toss on every NES ROM ever.
Right. But now what's even confusing is like one of the first entries in the menu is Contra. All right. You hit start and it goes into a whole nother list of Contra games.
Like all the Contra games? That's
something
cool.
Like that. And some of the games in the system are actually Japanese, because you'll see Japanese text in it. But it's got like it's got the NES port of Pac-Man. And that's actually good. I played Galaga. That was actually good, too. Excitebike was in there. Joust was in there. I played a little bit of that. A little bit of Super Mario.
That's MAME emulation and...
NES. No, it's all... They're all NES ports.
Okay.
Every single game looks like and feels like an NES port to me.
Yeah, then there's an NES emulator in there, and you should definitely get into the memory and see if you can upgrade the memory and... You might not need to, I don't know, but put every NES ROM ever on there.
Right. Yeah, or actual ones instead of like, because some of them just feel like knockoffs of some of the other games. Like I said, that one, granted, I don't know if there ever was a game like that on NES, but there was that. And then there's something like, there's one that'll say Star Wars. I thought, wait a minute, was there an NES port of Star Wars? I go into it. There's like three games that have like one called Star Wars, Star Race, Star something, Star, you know, And you go into the games, and all three games are like the exact same game, even though they have different titles in the menu. It's like, you know, it's like one of those things that I'd love to like ditch that kind of garbage in there, because there's plenty of good stuff in there. But if I had any criticism of it, is now it does have a like a Famicom style handheld like controller, like you can plug in a controller, and if you plug it into the TV, two people can play the game, okay, using the TV. The controller, like I said, looks like a Famicom controller, but instead of only two buttons, it has four. Okay, and the only way you have the hook to the TV is composite in the RCA, so it's not HD. You know, that's fine. You know, if you want to do that, I'm probably never going to do that because I don't care. But and then the headphone jack on it is 2.5 millimeter versus 3.5 millimeter. So that's useless still.
No, it's not. 50-cent adapter.
Yeah, you'd have to get that. But now I don't even know if that'll work 100% because that's also the same port they use for the AV port. But anyway, I just turn the volume down and play it on a low level. That's fine by me. So, for $20, not a bad deal. Not a bad deal at all. The D-pad is a little bit funky. I think most of my problem with it is the size of it. It's a little small.
For $20, you should take the thing apart.
Yeah.
And see what else you can put on it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because I want to know if it could run any other emulators, too.
Yep. Yeah, it's like a 20 and some change. But that was one of the things that I got in our gift exchange with Gear Diary. I actually had to buy mine yet, but for my pick. But the other was I got a lamp, a Pac-Man lamp, and it actually is powered by USB cable. It's a micro USB on the lamp itself, and in a USB A on the other end. And you just hit the button once, and it just lights up. You hit it again, it looks like it doesn't do anything, all right? But then when you tap on the top of the Pac-Man head, it goes waka, 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 which is pretty cute.
Yeah.
And then you hit the button again, and it turns it off. But pretty neat little thing you just stick in your office. So kind of why it was on my list. It's one of those things where, gosh, I'd really like to have that, but I don't really want to spend 20 some dollars on it. You know? I figure that's perfect thing for a gift exchange list. Figured somebody might get it for me, and then I don't have to pay for it. So it's kind of the start of some of my 80s decorations for the new home office. So, which I did talk to our construction superintendent today. One of the questions I had for him, and he probably doesn't have all the answer on that, but I had asked him and said, Joel doesn't need pots. I don't need plain old telephone service, all right?
And you I need Cat 6e run everywhere.
Well, here's the thing, though. I had now I don't know. They probably run Cat 6 now, but when they built our house in '98, the phone line wires were actually all Cat 5. All right, all I really would have had to do was cut off the phone end of it, and then just rewire everything. You know, I just never did it. You know, but in any case, I asked them. I said, are they putting phone lines in these houses? And, you know, if it is in the package, and if it's in the package, can I have them just put RJ45s in there instead? And he's like, yeah, I think many have done that. And I'm like, that is exactly what I want. That's exactly what I want. So I want to call the electrician and say, hey, what do I get? You know, how much, you know, do I get? Can I do X? Can we do this? You know, do we need to meet after a, after framing is complete, before you go do your job, so we can, you know, square things away and find out, you know, what needs to go and all that stuff. So I want to call the electrician probably tomorrow or Friday and see if I can't get a hold of them and determine that stuff. Because what I'd like to do is I'd like to put basically a lines from the bonus room, which is my office, or wherever. I don't really care wherever they are, as long as they're from one location, you know, and put the cable, the coaxial cable for the cable modem in that location, wherever all the wires run to for the Ethernet, run them all the same place so that I basically just plug in everything into my router and be good. You know, so we'll see. And I'm definitely going to switch to back to Spectrum. And I'm probably going to look at probably between now and when we finally move in, probably going to buy my own cable modem just because I can do that. And then all I have to do is when we move is just pick up the phone and say, hey, turn it on.
And that way, the next time Rich is on, you can tell him to shut the fuck up.
I'd do that anyway. Anyway, but so we'll see what happens. Some of the things makes me wonder too, because they put in a security system in the house. I believe the security system has 4G in it already. So I don't know if and I don't care. You know, I don't really want to piggyback on that because 4G sucks compared to gigabit, which is what I want to get with a Spectrum. So I found out all the little details, like my garage is going to be on the left as you face the house, and there's like if you go to do like an expansion, you know, like if you want to put an addition on the house, I know where we can do that. Like we can go like 25 foot from the behind where the house is today, we can go 25 feet more before we run into issues with code and all that jazz, you know. If we ever did a addition, it would be in the back. You can only go 5 foot away from each side of the house. There's eight foot from the property line to where the house is. So I'm thinking there's going to be about 16 feet between us and the neighbors, which is perfect. It's further than it was where I am now, and that's great. So all those little details, and then basically he said his boss, who's like the vice president of the division up here, thinks it's gonna be a couple more days and they'll have permits, and once they have permits they can start digging, and they'll get the digging done, and once the digging starts, it's from that day, it's 120 days and they'll be done. So that's about 4 months. So about April, May, like we were thinking. Well, not like we're thinking now, and that's only because
April, May of
2021.
Yeah. Uh huh.
Yep. Yeah. It only takes them about that long to build the house, and that's about right. It's even better because I that's actually one of the things I was talking with him, because when we did our first house in the '90s, late '90s, there was a work equity thing where, like, you paint your house, you plant a tree, you do this, you do that, and they'll give you some money towards your home. Okay. And I was talking to him and said, I guess they don't really do that anymore. He says, yeah, they stopped doing that because people weren't doing it. And I'm like, so what happened? Did you guys have to do it? And I'm gathering that's what happened. But... and I'm okay with that. I don't want to do that because I'm going to have to do enough of that anyway because I'm not moving anymore.
Yeah.
Not until they move me into a home.
Anyways, new topic.
Yep, new topic.
Dan.
Yes.
I put a link in Mumble to my favorite, an audio portion of my favorite part of last year's HPR New Year's special. I was wondering if you could play it. Just to torture my daughter.
Hold on a second.
All right. Let's see. Sorry, this is...
No worries, I kind of sprung it on you.
Is this a...
It's MP3.
Why is it telling me permission denied?
That's a good question. I have it open.
Hold on. Maybe I should use. Okay. Sorry. Okay, here we go.
Listen to me. Okay. Okay, how many okays are we going to have? So, is she listening right now?
No, but I'll make sure that she listens to this podcast.
Oh, okay. What?
Can I help with the tree?
Can I help with the tree?
We can't reach the top.
Can't reach the top.
We're short.
You're short.
You're yes. short.
Did you say? Can you say that again? Say
no,
it again.
I'm not saying
oh, we heard it.
Oh, oh, they heard
we
it.
Did.
Good. That's recorded for forever.
Oh, that's gonna go up on Internet Archive, and
that's pretty
forever,
funny.
Right?
That's pretty funny.
So they couldn't reach it, huh?
I found it hilarious.
She's short.
You okay? They all are. You want to hear this? Here's a crazy story, right? Here's a crazy Christmas tree story. On Friday, I went with my daughter Avery to get a Christmas tree, and usually we all go as a family. But we're like, hey, pandemic, whatever. Let's limit the number of people that have to go out. We don't know who's going to be there, blah, blah, blah. Just Avery and myself. We went during the day when I was off figuring not a lot of people. A lot of people should be at work or whatever. Not a lot of people around. And we always go to this place right up the street, like a couple of miles up the road. It's this nice little Asian guy who's selling trees. You know, it's got one of those like mom and pop setups there selling trees. We've gone to him the past couple of years. Lo and behold, he's there. We pull in. There's only two other people walking around looking at trees. It looks like this family, this mother and two kids, are they've selected. And then there's this other, the older couple in there looking around. Everybody's wearing masks, everybody's happy. Avery and I, you know, we just dart in there. We're looking around. We think we found the tree. This guy comes up to me, and I couldn't tell. Like, I thought he was with the other, the couple with the woman with the two kids. I thought he was like their dad or something. But then I'm like, well, I guess he works here. He comes up to me. He's like, hey, can I ask you a question? And I'm like, okay. He's like, he points to my head and he's like, is that a birthmark? And I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, what the fuck? Do I have something on my head? Do I have something on my forehead? Am I bleeding or something? Or is there a cut? I'm like, I don't know what you mean. He's like, your hair, man, is that a birthmark? And I'm like, finally I caught on to what he was saying, right? He's like, he's asking if the gray stripe in my hair is because I had a birthmark. And he's like, I just asked because I had a girlfriend like a long time ago who had a gray stripe in her hair, and it was because of a birthmark, and it looked so cool. And he's like, dude, I love your hair. It looks cool. I'm just curious if that's a birthmark. And I'm like, no.
He had a girlfriend.
And just like the normal, I was like totally caught off guard. He's like, don't worry, man. I'm not gay. I just think your hair's awesome. You know? And I'm like,
he was looking for a new girlfriend.
And I'm like, no, this is just my normal hair. And he's like, oh man, don't ever cut it. And I'm like, yeah, well, I haven't since March when this started. And I said, it started like a quarter inch. And I was like, oh, you know, apparently he works there, right? He's working with this guy. And like, I'm like, dude, what? Like, he's like, don't ever cut your hair, man. It's awesome. It's great. It looks great. I'm like, okay, whatever. And he's talking to my daughter, and he's like, wow, how tall are you? Because my Avery's like really tall. He's like 6'3". And the guy who operates the place is like, he's like, why don't you go do something else? It was just like this weird interaction. That's why I don't like going out in public anymore. These weird interactions. Then he came back and offered us trail mix. I'm like, dude, we're in the middle of a pandemic. I'm not going to take trail mix out of your hand.
Yeah, that is a little odd.
Yeah, it was very odd. We got in, got out, and now we got a Christmas tree. It's like, I don't want to leave my house. Weird stuff.
No, it's weird. I'm not that tall. I'm only like between 5'10 and 5'11. But like everybody around me is in the 5'2 or under range.
Okay.
So a lot of times I feel really tall.
No, I'm the opposite. Like everybody in my family is like an inch or two taller than me. I'm 5'10, 5'11, and
so you're the short shit.
Yeah, I'm the like my wife is like 5'11, so I'm like just a hair under her, and my two oldest daughters are a little taller than that. Like I said, Avery's like 6'3.
My dad is the tallest person in my family, or he was before he started shrinking from old age. But he's 6 foot, and everybody else is shorter than me.
Yeah, I'm the tallest between me, my brother, and my dad. I tower over my dad. He's like 5'6", 5'7", and I'm 5'11", 5'10", somewhere around there. You know, so it's like... my brother's about the same size as my dad, but I'm both taller than both of them. And my son definitely taller than him. He got more of my wife's genes than mine, with the height anyway. He's got my hair though, so, and face, which I'm sorry about that.
You should be.
Not disagreeing. blah, 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 blah. Yeah, it's weird, like weird stuff like that. Like that's kind of like Luke. Like we're in there talking to this our construction superintendent, and he kept going. I'm like, dude, not now. It's not the time to start talking about cats. yeah, and he's like, "Oh, I get to talk too." I'm like, "Yeah, but when you actually bring something relevant to the discussion, you can talk." I'm like, "Talk about the house. Tell them about our cats. We're leaving the house about noon, the apartment, I should say, and every Wednesday, at least in Ohio, I don't know about where you live, but every Wednesday they do a siren test for tornado warning sirens. And they do that all year round, including now, right? Where tornadoes are not likely to happen, all right? So before the siren, though, up here, I noticed it was weird where... I heard a voice on the system before the siren went off, and they were seeing kind of some weird stuff. And then the sirens went off. I'm like, oh, that's just a tornado sirens. I'm like, and my son's like, yeah, they have a different system than they have in Columbus. I'm like, I don't fucking care. I'm like, I don't care. You know, I just want them to ring when there's a tornado or when they're testing it. And I don't need to know whether they have Welland sirens or what. I'm like, I don't care. I just care they work. Same thing goes to the bowling alley. He says, well, this bowling alley has Brunswick pin setters. I'm like, do they work? Yeah. Okay. I don't care if they're Brunswick or whatever. but...
That's
where I think a lot of that weird behavior comes from, though. Like that guy probably had a little bit of autism in him, is my thinking.
It's possible.
So, anybody jump on the Cyberpunk 2077 launch yesterday?
You know what?
Nope.
I'm stuck in limbo, man. I don't want to get any of those games until I get a PS5.
You don't want to do it on PC?
Oh, no, I don't have a PC powerful enough to play that stuff.
He doesn't have a Windows machine either.
You don't need it. Okay. Yeah, no.
Yeah, yeah, he does.
You don't need a Windows machine to be able to play it.
I can't justify paying $60 for a game, which is what they want on Stadia.
Yeah,
that's the only thing I can have to play it.
Steam too.
Yeah, that's. I don't have the money for that. I did grab a whole bunch of other stuff. I'm debating keeping the Stadia Pro because you do get some free games with that. Decent ones too.
Well, I may get Cyberpunk 2077 eventually, but I definitely want to see how it reviews.
Yep. I can get Hitman 2, the bundle, for free.
Plus, if I wait a week, it'll probably go on Steam sale.
That's probably true, too.
Why, have you picked it up?
I have not picked it up.
I haven't either.
I was looking at that, and I mean, obviously, Demon's Souls remake when I get a PS5. I was looking at that and Phoenix Rising. I think it's what it's called, Phoenix Rising, or Phoenix.
Yeah, Phoenix.
Is it Phoenix?
I think it is.
I thought it was Phoenix. I've seen ads for it, but. That looks like be my alley too. Like Cyberpunk looks fantastic, but I'm not going to get it on the PlayStation 4.
Well, it's PC system requirements. The minimum and the recommended are not terrible.
But I don't have a system that's going to fit those requirements.
Yeah, but I do.
Oh yeah, you do.
Right. But I'm just looking, and you know the minimum, and this is kind of surprising to me. The minimum requirement is the NVIDIA GeForce GTX 780, and that's you know what, 4 generations old now, 5 generations old now.
Yep.
Uh huh. That's a pretty good you know reach back there, and yeah, an i5 third gen.
Mm-hmm.
Kai got my message that you posted the audio on the show, and she sat down next to me, and she's trying to give me the I'm mad look, and it's... I'm trying not to laugh.
Yeah, Stadia, they want $59.99.
I couldn't hear you. What'd you say?
You're evil.
I try.
Nah. No, he's just a dad. And he knows what embarrasses you. And that's our job, right, Dan?
That's it.
See, one thing I don't get, especially with Stadia, is that'd be a prime thing where Stadia Pro, they can just like throw in a whole bunch of back catalog, like, and they do have like some free games and stuff, but I'm thinking something like that, because it's streaming the game, all right? Something like that, they could probably eat up like 4 or 5 gigs of space and give you like every NES game on it, or something like that. If you know, if they'd work out a deal with Nintendo or anybody, you know, any of the lesser systems, like all the Atari games, you know, and those things would work exceptionally well over the streaming service. But do they do that? Nope.
And like, honestly, we're a bit niche in that we want to do that older gaming, that nostalgia gaming.
Mm-hmm, yep.
But most of their target audience, 18 to 35,
they don't want to play that stuff.
They don't want to play that stuff.
Yep. They want to play the Class A games like Cyberpunk 2077 and Destiny 2. Although that's an older game, they still want to play it, you know. Although you can get Doom 64.
Doom plays on everything.
Yeah, it does. Including watches.
if there was a toaster with a processor and a screen, somebody would get Doom to play on it.
Mm-hmm. Like, I'd like to play, I think MechWarrior 2 would work great on there, or MechWarrior 4 even, you know. But they don't have any of the MechWarrior games on, well, anything except for PC. Maybe Steam on it. I think Steam or Gold Games might have one of them. I'd have to look.
Why didn't more of the Armored Core games get ported over to other things?
Mm-hmm. What did I play? Oh, Orcs Must Die 3 I played the other day on Stadia. That was a lot of fun. I think like Tower Defense. But there's a 3D, like a 3D shooter component to it as well. Kind of was like, because you lay these traps out for the orcs to run over, and then you shoot whoever's left after that, you shoot them. Pretty neat. I played that. Let's see, my thing though is too, like, I'm looking at like some, a lot of these new games, like so Cyberpunk 2077 and all that, and they're all rated M, and that, you know, it's not that I'm not, you know, not that I say all games have to be PG or anything like that, but they don't have to be all rated M, but they seem to be all rated M.
Like I said, once again, that's target audience. You're not, even if you are somewhat targeting the 12 to 16 range,
yeah,
most of your target audience is that 18 to 35 range.
Yep.
Which is, you know, your mature audience. So you make it a mature game to appeal to a broader audience.
Yep. Yep. And for some dumb reason, I was watching a lot of the Marvel movies on Disney Plus over the weekend. I don't know why. Not like I haven't seen
them. For some reason, I went through like and watched most of the Marvel movies,
mm-hmm,
I think, last week.
Well, Disney Plus has all of them except for the Spider-Man movies, because Sony is run by dicks.
Yeah, I haven't rewatched Far From Home yet.
Yeah, they don't have Far From Home or Homecoming or the other. What's the other Spider-Man movie? Oh no, wait, I'm sorry. There's three movies they don't have: the two Spider-Man movies and the Ed Norton Hulk movie.
Oh, you know what? I thought they did have it, but then again, I think I bought them on Amazon before I got Disney Plus.
Right. Well, every other one is on there: Endgame, you know, Iron Man 3, Infinity War.
Yeah, I've been watching The Mandalorian. I really enjoy it. It's really good.
I have been watching The Mandalorian as well. It is awesome.
This past week's episode was really good. I said to my wife, I'm like, what the hell happened? I felt like that episode was like 15 minutes long. It went so, it was so good.
And it was so brutal.
A lot
too.
Of action.
That one was so brutal as well. I mean, I don't want to talk too much about it in case you ain't seen it yet. And I know you guys all have, but maybe Pat hasn't.
I'm not up to that yet.
Do you think Grogu will end up on the dark side?
I don't know. But we got to see Grogu kick some ass. By the way, Grogu, Pat, and this doesn't really reveal much of anything, but that's the name of the child. The Baby Yoda. It was not the latest episode, but the episode before that where they revealed his name.
Yeah, I'm up to one where they were on the Fish World.
Fish World.
Yeah, the one where... The controversial one where he was eating the eggs?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody got upset.
Why is that controversial?
I don't know.
Mandalorian,
some people got upset that he was over that.
Because some people have difficulty reproducing, and so these babies were casually being eaten. And then the other controversy where some
TV
Mandalorian...
Show,
yeah,
this is not
exactly.
Real life.
And then the Mandalorian armor with the boobs.
Yes. Yes. People are idiots. Why did they have to give the armor boobs? Because it fits better. I don't know. Who gives a fuck?
Well, yeah. If you do a bit of research on armor for women, it has to be more curved.
Yes.
To fit, but it shouldn't protrude like breasts, because then that has niches where weapons can lodge
through. Yeah, but
instead of sliding off.
Of course, it's not made with Besker, so in that case, but you know, whatever. You know, I'm like, yeah. You want strong female characters, and yeah, I mean, I can get it. You don't want to emphasize the boobies, but...
Well, no, it's just impractical for armor. Literally, yeah. It is the wrong way to make a woman's armor.
I've heard that, and I've heard the other two, so I'm not going to disagree. I'm not going to agree or disagree. I'm going to just say, get a life.
Nerd life.
That's right. Worst show ever.
Speaking of shows, before I go on to this next one, has anybody ever watched Pitch Meeting from Screen Rant?
Nope.
No.
Give it a shot. It's funny as hell. Especially like if you like they've done all the Marvel, Star Wars. It's basically this one guy, he plays two characters, and the one guy is a screenwriter who's pitching the movie to the producer. And it's freaking funny. I think you'll really like it. They're like 3 to 6 minutes long each, and they're just, it's really good. It's Pitch Meeting from Screen Rant. We've been hooked on them. Like, we can't stop watching them. They're just hilarious. And he really kind of pokes holes in the bad plots and devices that they use in there. And just like, they're good. They're quick. They're fun. Check it out. But has everybody here watched Picard?
I have.
Yep.
Did you watch Picard, Joe?
No, it is on my list of things to watch, but I just haven't gotten around to it yet.
Oh, all right. I don't want to say much about it then.
Don't worry about spoiling anything. You're not going to bother me.
Well, all I'm going to say is I really liked Picard, but halfway through it, I started getting to the point like, how are they going to resolve this?
Right.
And I'm like, when they did resolve it, I'm like, oh, come on. That's ridiculous. Right. I'm like, they've solved nothing. I'm like, they've solved nothing. And well, it was pointless.
How else are they going to get a season two?
That's right.
I'm not talking just about that. I'm talking about, like, just the whole, like... So you know he was supposed to die, but he doesn't die then, right, Joe?
Who? Picard?
Picard.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, a couple times.
But I'm like, okay, I get it. My wife was really pissed about that. She's like, I can't, you know, that, she's like, come on, violation, whatever. But I'm like, what's really, they solved nothing, because it's still out there, and anybody could build what they were doing, and it, you know, at any point,
right.
my wife actually sided with the Romulans in this case. She's
holy,
like,
crap.
I'm like, she's like, you know, if they would have just listened to the Romulans, we wouldn't have these problems. And I'm like,
they were like,
but...
pretty evil at the beginning of, actually pretty much through the movie. I mean, it's like, you know, they're the ones that caused the revolt or the
Yeah, but I
get Android Revolt anyway. I mean,
but I get why they did it. You know, and I'm like, at one point, I'm like, how are you really gonna go against 200,000 years of a culture's ingrained mythology? You're gonna get Picard to change their mind? You know, like, how are you gonna do this?
Right.
I didn't like when it happened. I'm like, well, again, you stopped it for right now, but any one of those androids down there has the capability of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're there. They're like, it's there. It's not going away. You know, like, mm-hmm. Why would the Romulans be like, okay, whatever, goodbye. And then Starfleet's like, okay, whatever, goodbye. And I'm like, well, why did the Romulans just come back then?
One of the interesting things about Picard was they introduced not that the group of must kill androids, Romulans, but the other ones, the ones that he visit where what's his face was from, the kid
Enron.
I can't remember. Yeah.
Is that his name? The Tal. Not they were against the Tal Shar.
Yeah,
they were the other guy. They were. They're, I like them.
I would say they are in Discovery,
and that's cool. And that's what I find about
right.
My problem with Star Trek a lot of times is they take on this like huge problem,
right?
And then they kind of just,
mm-hmm.
like, have this solution where afterwards you're like, really? That's it?
Well, no, I think the other...
How do you wrap all this up? There's this,
right.
And that's your solution.
And I'm trying to remember if in Picard, did they is Picard really... That's prime timeline, not JJ-verse.
I don't think this isn't JJ Verse.
Okay, so basically JJ Verse just doesn't exist anymore.
Well, I don't know until they have the next movie come out.
Right, we'll see
like
if that happens.
The second Highlander movie, it never happened.
Right, right.
Well, wait,
Because if you go with the JJ Verse and you look at the time where Picard was and Discovery now, Vulcan is no more.
Well, what's Lower Deck?
Oh, that's a cartoon.
I know, but is that JJ Verse or is that?
I think it's Prime. I thought.
Okay.
I haven't watched any of it yet, but.
Well, Discover is.
Discovery, yeah.
Discovery is Prime, right? Not JJ Verse.
Yes, it's Prime, but Discovery looks like JJ Verse. Looks like JJ Verse. In fact, they have a window just like they did in the Star Trek 2009 and in those movies in the JJ or Kelvin timeline, if you want to call it the right thing. So the Discovery doesn't have the main view screen like the Enterprise, the original Enterprise did. And I think that I'd have to go back and watch season 2 where they did meet up with the actual NCC 1701, which does look different than either JJ Verse or the Prime Kirk timeline. I want to say I think that has the same kind of a concept where they have instead of a screen they have a transparent aluminum window where they project stuff over it, but that's part of the problem, you know, because you go into season 3 of Discovery. I don't really want to talk about that because it kind of ruined it a little bit.
Well, I can't believe they're already at 3 seasons of Discovery,
right? And there's an actual continuation of a Next Generation episode in Discovery. And you can just look at the list of episodes and you can tell which one it is just by the name of it. So, but that was interesting. So,
were you going to say something, Pat?
It started off good season three, but I don't know. I think it's kind of falling
Discovery.
Off a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
A little disappointing.
Yeah. Well, I think my only, I don't care as much now. At least it kind of makes sense with the character, because there's an actual non-binary character in Discovery now, the first one in the Star Trek at all, and there was a kind of a scene where they got to the pronoun subject.
No, I do believe there was a TNG episode where they had an entire species that was essentially non-binary, even though many of them did have traits towards male or female that were subdued. Because Riker got in a lot of trouble for having intercourse with one of them.
Oh, I remember the one you're talking about, but this isn't the whole ball box where the person is transgendered as well.
And not the character, the person.
Well, both, actually.
Okay.
So, it's okay. I mean, they can do what they want to do. It's their show. But it felt pushed to me, if you know what I mean. Yeah, you know, it's like, I don't care. That's fine. Do it.
Exactly.
You know, your show. Do I don't
you
care.
Go, but I really don't give a shit.
Yeah, but don't get, you know, make it part of the story. Don't just add it in here as it's just there, you know.
Exactly.
But at least I understand it, because the character in Discovery is a Trill, so it actually kind of the pronouns question actually makes a lot of sense, because there are two people there.
Exactly, there's multiple people. It's gone through multiple lives. It's both male and female over multiple generations. Okay.
So it actually kind of makes sense that in the show more than it does in real life sometimes. But you know, and I don't care what people do in real life. That, you know, they can do what they want, but. But other than that, I've been enjoying season three. I felt it's been better than even season two.
Mandalorian's way better.
I think Mandalorian's a better show. Yes.
Yeah, it's way better. Like sevenfold better.
And better Star Wars than pretty much any movie that's come out since Return of the Jedi.
Yep. Agree. Though Rogue One was good. I like Rogue One a lot.
I don't know.
It's basically a World War II movie, a sci-fi universe.
One thing I try not to do when I'm flipping around on YouTube, not watching any, you know, say there's nothing of my subscribed shows out, nothing new, and I start going, you know, just go to the homepage, see what there is. And one thing I try not to get into is there's these super geeks that are like they'll do a YouTube video all on comparing all of the Battlestars in the RDM series. It's like, why?
There's this whole video series on nitpicking every fucking show and movie. I mean, yeah, they're full of plot holes, but it's a fucking show. It's a movie. Fucking enjoy it. It's escape from reality, you know?
Well, it's like they're talking about the Jupiter class Battlestar Galactica, you know, that was Jupiter class, and the Pegasus was Mercury class, and they're talking about these ships like they're actually real things, and I'm like, it's a TV show. Ugh. Too geeky. I mean, I'm pretty geeky, but I'm not that geeky. I just know. I just watch it because I like it.
You know, it's like the last movie. I just watched that. You know, it's full of plot holes, and you can criticize the shit out of it. But at the end of the day, it's just a movie. It's entertainment, you know?
And a lot of people didn't like how they treated Luke Skywalker in the last three movies. I kind of get it, but then I kind of get why they did it that way. And in the end, I think Luke ends up being one of the most powerful Jedis there ever was. I mean, projecting yourself over the across the galaxy. That's pretty powerful, man.
He used some tools to do that.
Yeah. So I mean, to me, that's you know, you can quibble about that, I guess, but it's like I'm like I didn't you know I did not I mean I will say of the three new ones, The Last Jedi was pretty awful, you know. But it wasn't that's like a lot of people say some of the same things about the prequels. And I think for me in the prequels, how Anakin was in episode 1 and 2 was kind of critical to building up the fall in Revenge of the Sith. And people didn't like that because they wanted Anakin to be evil from the get-go, and he just wasn't. And that was the whole point, is Anakin fell. He was good, very good, and he fell because of his love for Padme.
I thought those movies were terrible.
Honestly. Oh, I'm not saying they were the best. No, they're definitely not. But they're not as bad as some people bring them out to be, you know. At least that's my feeling. And the same thing goes with the sequels, you know. Although I am disappointed in how they treated what's his face?
The new Han Solo guy?
No, the guy who was a stormtrooper in the first
Finn.
One. Finn, yeah. I kind of didn't like how they treated him.
First movie,
yeah. In Last Jedi and the other one, you know, because at the end of the first one, you kind of thought maybe Finn could be the Jedi character. I don't know, you know. And then they made Rey such a Mary Sue, who was just so powerful, which. In the end, if you watch the Rise of Skywalker, you figure out why. And it kind of tied it up nicely, I thought, but
yeah, the last one was probably the best out of the last three.
I think so. Even though they brought Palpatine back from the
death. Yeah, that was kind of weak.
We gotta start wrapping this up.
Yes, we do.
All right. Oh, okay. Man. Wait.
HPR, New Year's episodes coming, or New Year's Eve thing. You're going to play the promo for that.
Yeah.
Me and Claudia also recorded an episode for HPR, Linux audio stuff.
Oh, cool.
Oh, there you go.
When is that coming out?
I think the 28th.
Okay, awesome. I look forward to that. It's hard to believe that, like, there's 2 weeks till Christmas.
I know. It's crazy.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like it. Still feels it like last night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Holy moly. Thank you for reminding me. Again, to play the Hacker Public Radio.
Yep. Oh. Brief mention of it, mostly because I haven't had time to actually look of it. But there's a new version, a new Red Hat Enterprise Linux fork called Rocky Linux.
Oh, is that because they're closing down? What's it called?
Well, CentOS is CentOS. Part. Yes, Red Hat owns CentOS now.
Right, but they're closing it down.
For what?
They just don't want to work on it anymore.
Yep. I thought that they were end of lifing like one of the Red Hats, and the CentOS Stream was going to be the pickup of that. Maybe I read that wrong. I should have paid more attention.
Well, it says in the shocking news, the CentOS governing board and Red Hat announced that they will be shifting their focus and investment to CentOS Stream instead of CentOS Linux.
Okay, that's what I heard. Which CentOS Stream?
I don't know. I'm going to Google it.
That's preparation for us, right?
Yeah. Well, I just saw it because Link shared it. It's a continuously delivered distro So basically, it's
Red Hat's version of Arch, right? Or Tumbleweed. Yeah,
that's what it sounds like.
Okay.
Yep, it's available on x86-64, ARM64, 9mm power. So no, it won't run on my old G4 Mac. I'm finding less and less that can run on it. It's in storage if it survives. Fortunately, my storage facility, it's environment controlled, so I'm not worried about it shattering or anything like that. But yeah.
So wait a second. Oh.
Anyway, Rocky
so
Linux.
I guess where it used to be was Fedora Linux was their quote desktop / bleeding edge stuff.
CentOS is
then
not
Red Hat
as
was
edge.
Red Hat was their
paid thing.
Server business corporate desktop operating system. Well, I've probably their server operating system. And CentOS yep. was like I thought CentOS lagged a little behind. Yeah, might have lagged a little behind Red Hat, particularly like releases come out to Red Hat, then they get trickled down to CentOS, but not that far apart. So what they're saying right. now is CentOS Stream is going to be Bowling wedged release. In between Fedora and Red Hat, where it's going to be it's going to track just ahead of current Red Hat release, so it's going to be their bleeding edge for Red Hat.
That's what it sounds like.
Huh.
And Rocky Linux is being headed by the original CentOS creator.
Huh.
So that's kind of interesting. I'll have to try it. Because I think Scientific Linux is done. Which, what was Scientific Linux? Wasn't that Oracle's Linux?
No, Oracle's was Unbreakable.
That's right.
Wasn't that it? And so Scientific Linux was not Oracle.
No. Distribution produced by Fermilab, CERN, DESY, and ETH Zurich.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's dead, as far as I know.
Scientific Linux is dead.
Yep.
Or... The OS itself is dead. The tools you can get and use, but I think it was with CentOS, wasn't it?
Yep. Yep. And it's sad to say that's some of the most significant Linux news in a long time, which I guess that is a good thing, unless you... Well, I guess you can also count that Raspberry Pi's, the port of Ubuntu to the Raspberry Pi is an officially supported mainstream Linux distro on the Raspberry Pi. I'm liking it. It's fine. I use it on my Pi 4 currently. Anyway,
so interesting show. Just to clear things up, apparently CentOS Stream is going to get patches and updates ahead of Red Hat Linux, that Red Hat Linux release. So it's going to be updated there, then trickle down into Red Hat Linux.
So it's not going to be as stable as Red Hat.
They say it should be as stable, but it's going to end up there first and then trickle down.
Right.
So, all right, I'm going to play our promos. We got to get out of here. Thank you very much. We'll see you in a week. Enjoy yourselves. Mm-hmm. Here they are.
Hey, folks. It's that time of year again. Time for the Hacker Public Radio 24 Hours New Year's Eve show. We encourage everyone to join us for stimulating conversation and maybe send a Happy New Year's greeting to the HBR community. We plan on starting at 10 a.m. UT December 1st, also known as 5 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. We'll keep the recording going. 12 a.m. UTC January 1st, also known as 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, unless people are still on and talking. To join us, all you have to do is install Mumble. It is available on all platforms, including iOS and Android. Then, just create a nick and go to hackerpublicradio.org for the server details. Connect, join the Hacker Public Radio room, and you're there. If you can't join us in Mumble, but would like to hear the show live, we will have a stream up so you can listen. You can go to hackerpublicradio.org for the server details of the stream. So come on and join us. It's always a good time.
Oh my God.
Hacker
Public Radio.
Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
Hello, my name is Matt, and I've started a new podcast called LibreQuest. I talk about Linux and general technical topics. To get the show, visit LibreQuest.org.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
Well, you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
Yeah. All right. Eat that sushi, Joel.
There you go.
What are we playing?
What's that sound like to you?
Galaga?
That's Excite Bike.
Oh.
Back to the menu. Here's the menu. The menu has music.
I remember that sound.
I will say the some of the soundtracks in the games feel a little off. Like it's out of tune, so it's definitely emulation. So, and it's not like cuz you can like the I think you can get the whole Nintendo system on a chip now.
Yeah.
If I remember right. So. And if I were to buy a game system, I know a lot of people want to buy the PlayStation 5, which is also very hard to find now, I heard. But I kind of wanted the Xbox Series X. Just because it has incredible backward compatibility. You can play all the way back to the Xbox.
You ain't getting one of those either after the holidays, I think.
Yeah, I know. They're going just probably as fast. Actually, the Switch is probably a good idea now because it's not the newest thing and they'll probably be in stock.
It's up and down from what I hear, stock.
Yeah.
It's not as hard to get as PS5 or whatever.
Anyway,
I gotta stop the
recording.
Say goodnight, Joel.
Goodnight, Joel.
Yeah, and turn the heat on, and then I got the problem. But I don't think they're that savvy to catch on. Not for this short mm-hmm. time. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. Savvy on the heat.
And we're not savvy on snow.
You have snow?
Service now. That's what we call snow.
Mm-mm-mm.
Yeah, we call that snow at our workplace, or service someday, or service maybe. But got my new iPad, and I got my Christmas gifts from my secret Santa.
A new iPad?
That wasn't from the secret Santa. Yeah. That
I was
going to
say,
myself.
Man, that's a pretty gracious secret Santa you got
awesome
there.
Secret Santa, huh?
Yeah.
No. Got Pac-Man Light and my Blansters handheld, which is interesting. A lot of duplicate games that are merely reskinned. Weird little handheld. but fun. We had our conference, pre-construction conference was today.
I hope that one well.
Went pretty well. Our garage is going to be on the left-hand side of the house.
Wait. Is that facing the house or from the perspective of the front door facing out? I guess they got him.
Must be my night for weird internet shit.
Was that facing the house or from the perspective of looking out from the house onto the street that the garage is on the left-hand side?
That's all right. I'm on the...
I guess he's not hearing any of this.
Face the house. So
okay,
I'm
face
looking at the front of the house from the sidewalk, my garage is on the left-hand side of the house.
All right, that's what I thought.
No, I heard.
Okay, I just making sure. But I figured that's what you meant when you said left-hand side.
Yes, sir.
Is that uncommon that it's on the left-hand side?
Yep. They mix it up depending on which lot you get.
Oh, it's uncommon in that neighborhood.
No.
Oh.
It's not uncommon at all.
Well, I was gonna say I thought you said
they'll mix it up. Like a good example is our old house. If you actually looked at the model, you know, like a, or the diagram that they have on their website back in the day, it looked exactly like that. Ours isn't that case in that the picture you'll see on their website has a garage on the right hand side. Ours is the opposite, which is perfectly fine. I don't care.
It's common that they move the garage to a different side depending on where the house is on the property.
Yeah, it's to try and like improve traffic in and out of the driveways, so that way you know you don't because if you had them and it kind of also kind of looks odd to have like all the garages on the one side of the house, you know.
Yeah, it's cookie cutter.
Mm-hmm. I think still waiting for the answer from the salesperson. They didn't say this during, you know, when we were going through things, but the superintendent showed us the blueprint, which the blueprint actually shows the right hand side too, but it'll just be flipped, no big deal. If you look at the blueprint, it tells you on the blueprint that we're supposed to have a stone face on the not the side the garage is on, but on the other side. So, it would just be so. I don't know if that's true or not. Don't really care either way. If I had my preference, I'd go with the stone face, but I'm not paying extra for it. So. Either way is fine. I just want my house to be freaking built. As soon as they break ground, 120 days. So that's counting, you know, pouring the slab, putting the water table, stonework in, and then inspections and all that. And we'll have our next time we'll meet the guy is pre-drywall. And I've also found out my garage is going to be completely drywalled, Bill, which is really nice. I like that. So we should be in good shape. Looks like April, May closing time frame.
That's when you can move in? April, May?
Yes, somewhere around there, yeah.
Yep. Of 2032.
No, 2021.
That seems like a conservative estimate.
2021. Yeah.